Welcome to Behind the Bite, where we delve deep into the real-life struggles and triumphs surrounding food, body, and weight. I'm Dr. Christina Castanini, a psychologist and certified eating disorder specialist, bringing you a unique blend of personal experience as a recovered individual with over 25 years of professional expertise. In each episode, we'll share the courageous journeys of individuals who have faced these challenges firsthand, alongside insights from dedicated professionals in the field. Whether you're seeking healing, inspiration, or simply a deeper understanding, this podcast is here to empower you on your own path to a better life. Join us as we explore stories of resilience, discuss the latest insights, and strive to foster a community of support and growth. Together, we can break down barriers, challenge stigma, and pave the way towards healing and living authentically. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to today's show. I am thrilled to have Dr. Maria Baltazzi, who is an Emmy Award-winning television producer, international traveler, and renowned well-being teacher. With a fascinating career that spans producing Survivor on all seven continents and walking over 7,000 miles in marathons for charity, Maria has dedicated the last decades to studying happiness and mindfulness. Her certifications and degrees, including a PhD in conscious-centered living and training in positive psychology, have equipped her with profound insights into what it means to live a joyful and meaningful life. So in this episode, we're going to explore the eight essentials of happiness from her award-winning book, Take a Shot at Happiness, and uncover practical ways to redefine happiness as an inside job. So get ready for a conversation that possibly could transform how you view joy, purpose, and abundance in your own life. All right. Well, Maria, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited for our conversation today.
I am too. So how did you get inspired to write your book? I'm so curious.
So my book, Take a Shot at Happiness, How to Write, Direct, and Produce the Life You Want, is really a call to action. It's something that I encourage everybody to do, to really look at their well-being and their happiness. I consider myself to be a happiness advocate and explorer. And the seeds of it started on a very small island in the middle of the South China Sea, trying to figure out this new show called Survivor, which went on to be such a cultural phenomena. I mean, at the time I was doing the show, we were literally, I'm not exaggerating, getting Super Bowl numbers. So it was quite a time. And during the seven seasons that I did Survivor, I was one of the original supervising producers. And so I would always have the Survivor contestants until the very end. And so often I would be sitting in interview with them, and they would say, no, this isn't really me. This is me playing a game. And I'm like, no, that was you. Our cameras were recording your words and behavior. That was you. And I heard this so often that it started me thinking that we all have untapped potential that we are not fully aware of until we either tested, like the Survivor contestants. You don't really know how you're going to act and behave being on a remote island without your creature comforts, without your support system of friends and family, vying for life-changing money. You don't really know what personality aspects are going to come out, or you explore some aspect of yourself, which is what my book does. It invites readers to explore, what does happiness really mean to you? You know, and when I was at my darkest part of my life and not happy with how my professional life was going, how my personal life was going, and I didn't want to be stuck in that place. And so I made a very conscious choice to do something about it. And in that making of a choice, I came up with, I wrote a list of things that would, that have made me happy in the past and I felt would make me happier in the future. And that 8 lists became the basis of my dissertation in conscious living and then eventually the chapters of my book. So what I write about are the core values of happy people, the values that generally happy people embody, and they're having things like faith and love and a health in terms of your mind, body, and spirit, having an attitude of gratitude and being forgiving and having a sense of inner peace and, you know, not holding on to how things should be, and all of that really creates a life of abundance and purpose and meaning. So the seeds of that idea began on that island so many years ago. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So when you were watching people, I guess, on the show or talking to them, had you already gone through that part of your life where you would come up with the 8 things, or was that something that happened after?
And that's why I said it's a catalyst. It happened afterwards. You know, that show interviews just got me thinking about human behavior, because that ultimately that's what Survivor is. It's a social experiment. And then as I left the show and went on to do other things and life became not as I wished, as I was hoping for, that's when I started to then turn inward and think about that for myself.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So when you were going through it for yourself, were you reflecting back on like the conversations you had had with the people on the show too, and kind of relating back and forth as well?
Or? Not specific conversations. It was the idea that kept coming up, and what that continual coming up, what that triggered. Yeah. So it wasn't that I reflected, well, I had this, you know, conversation with Johnny Fairplay that reminded me. No, so it wasn't specific conversation. It was, you know, all the conversations, kind of the sum of that experience.
So 8 things. I don't know if you want to share what those might be. So like conversation for here or.
Yeah, no, I just ran through them. It's I call them happiness essentials. And these are the core values. They're the virtues and qualities of happy people. You know, these are the qualities that happy people tend to embody. I mean, you know, everybody defines happiness differently, but this tends to be, you know, based on everything I've experienced in research. These are the qualities that tend to be common from person to person who feel like they live a good life, a happy life. And so that is, one is having faith. And that's, you know, believing in something more significant than yourself. You know, having faith in yourself. Yeah. And you know, when I talk about faith, it's really how you define it. So it speaks to both the secular and the non-secular. You know, I think we all have some kind of faith. You have faith that you get on a plane in Los Angeles and you end up in New York safely. You know, I mean, there is always some kind of faith. And then after that comes having loving relationships. And when you have loving relationships, you tend to, you know, think about taking care of yourself and taking care of your health in a three-dimensional way. You're taking care of your mind, your body, and your spiritual world. Again, however you define that for yourself, which then you know, sets you up to be more grateful. You know, you start to notice the things that I found in myself, that I just suddenly started feeling very grateful for even the simple things, having a roof over my head, having food in the refrigerator, not being homeless like so many, not so far from where I live here in Los Angeles. And you know, when you have that attitude of gratitude, you are more able to be forgiving, not that you ever condone bad behavior, but at least you are willing to have the conversation to try and work something out, or at least understand why somebody did what they did. And again, not that you ever condone it, but at least you understand that perspective. And I feel like you forgive, so you can live, you can move on, you can go on with life. Because when you're always holding on to that anger, you know, that keeps you stuck. And then that leads into a sense of inner peace. You know, you feel a certain sense of calmness inside of you, because you're not all twisted up in anger over something or at someone. And then that gives you the ability to I call it detachment. And when I say detachment, that doesn't mean that you don't care. It's that you put out your aspirations, your intentions, your dreams, but you're not holding on to the result, that you're open to whatever it is you ultimately want coming to you as you want it, and also being open to another opportunity or solution. And then that the last one is abundance, that I think you have all of those other things going for you, and it creates a life of abundance. And abundance isn't about your bank account. It's about feeling rich in your relationships, rich in your health, that you know, it's so much more than a dollar figure. So those are that's a snapshot of the happiness essentials that I write and teach about and talk about.
Well, thank you for going down through them, because I think you're right. I think people do have different ideas about what happiness is. Almost like, you know, I hear so often with patients I work with, like it's some destination they're trying to achieve. It's a feeling versus like what you're talking about. You know, I so often, like just the population I work with, and maybe even people listening can say, you know, I often hear, oh, once I, you know, look a certain way, once I see that number on the scale or the size on my pants, then I'll be happy. And so I think that's a real stuck point a lot of times. It's like they're waiting to experience this state of happiness, as if it's not something they can achieve or feel now. It's like some destination based on some arbitrary external thing that they're trying to reach. So I'm just curious, like, what would you say to somebody who might come up to you and say, like, well, you know, I can't be happy unless I reach this goal?
Well, those are all external and fleeting and circumstantial. Mm-hmm. So even if you got down to the right weight, you got the right partner, you moved into the house you want, you got the car, you got the job, those are all outside of you. And those can change at any point. So you're now defining yourself, and it's one of the myths of happiness. I will be happy when. And, you know, when you are hanging your hat on something outside of you, you're giving away your control. You know, whereas if you are considering happiness to be, you know, both a choice and an inside job, now you have control. Now you can direct your happiness in a way that is beneficial to you, you know, and it's not based on something happening. And, you know, it's not that if then, you know.
Why do you think so many people struggle with that? I'm just curious. Like, what do you see?
I think it's I think it's the way we're conditioned. You know, we go to school to learn to be doctors, lawyers, psychologists, filmmakers. You know, we're taught so many things, except we're not taught how to manage our well-being. You know, that's slowly changing. I think, certainly in the time that I have been studying and researching and writing and practicing happiness studies, and Martin Seligman out of the University of Pennsylvania, who's considered the grandfather of positive psychology. Positive psychology is a very new field, as you know. I mean, that's maybe been around maybe 20 years, if that. And I think that post-pandemic, there's also a larger conversation, a greater global conversation about well-being. And I just think it's something that we haven't been taught. And then we buy into commercials and social media of how you should look or what you should have as being the measure of happiness. So I think that's what contributes. It's a lack of education and having poor modeling for happiness.
Well, that's certainly true. You know, it's interesting as you were talking about Survivor, right? It's like, here's people that are basically have, to your point, like none of their creature comforts, right? And trying to achieve like this wealth that's like life-changing, right? And so I'm just imagining like them going back to their homes and being so grateful for like a bed or like a roof, right? Or being around their families, a toothbrush, whatever it is, a shower. Food supply, like I can't even imagine like what that does in terms of like just, oh my gosh, I'm so happy I have like all of these things. They probably weren't like even aware of how grateful they were to have them before, right? And I don't know if like that came to mind for you as well when you were a producer on the show or talking to them.
Yes, they did grow in appreciation. And I think the show, as it has gone on, I think you see more of that within the show as opposed to in earlier seasons where that gratitude, it was there, but it was something that happened, I think, more post being on the show. And I feel that in more recent years, it's people's gratitude has come out more. Within the show itself. But I think that goes to the greater conversation that people are more aware of their happiness and well-being. You know? Cuz when we were in the pandemic, we were isolated. And you know, the way people were going to school, the way they were shopping, the way they were socializing, their work environment all changed. And a lot of people, that's where you had the great resignation. People didn't want to go back to their toxic work situation. That was no longer okay. And I think Me Too factors into that. I think Black Lives Matters. I mean, I think all of these things have contributed to a bigger conversation of well-being and what is okay and not okay anymore, whether it's in a work, social or individual context.
Well, maybe I could ask you, like, if you're okay sharing personally, like, did you have something happen in the pandemic where you kind of slowed down and kind of rethought some things in your own life as well?
Well, what was interesting for me in the pandemic, I admittedly, mine was more observational. I'm used to spending a lot of time on my own as an independent producer. Yeah, I am only around other people when I'm in production. So I'm used to working at home. I'm used to traveling to location, back and forth on my own. So I'm very comfortable in just my own company. I felt the rest of the world was catching up to what I was doing.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And I was happy about it.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting in, you know, the job I do, obviously, like, I saw so much and heard so much. And, you know, certainly, like, my field changed, like, quite dramatically. We couldn't see people in person. And so, even my entire, like, career shifted and changed, right? But I do think people definitely slowed down. They had to, right? They had to just, they weren't around other people. They had to, like, take a pause. And so I think there was a lot of, like, really thinking about, like, the things that mattered and the people that mattered. And, you know, to your point, like, not tolerating these long commutes anymore and the long hours. And yeah, it was a big revamping of, like, life. And I think it was a great thing, honestly.
I do too. And I think it was interesting for me to observe it and to have the conversation, you know, to have the conversation and hear, you know, so many people, whether it was friends or listening to a podcast or, you know, however you were getting the information, how many people were suffering, you know, feeling lonely, you know, mm-hmm. feeling isolated, feeling depressed. And
yeah,
it was interesting to me how prevalent, how big of an impact it had, because we're wired for connection. Now, one of the biggest determinants of happiness is the quality of your relationships. So if you're now a really social being and you are cut off from your social network, that's going to be really hard on you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think, you know, I've heard so much that, like, loneliness is one of the biggest factors right now that people are experiencing. And so as much as we're, like I say, we feel more connected with the internet and social media, I think people are in one way feeling like, oh, I'm more connected. I'm online. I'm this and that. I feel like, on the other hand, people are less connected in person and feel a little bit more lonely. And so it's kind of this double-edged sword. You know, I hear so often people saying, like, I don't know how to make friends. It's harder to make friends when you get older. Or how do you meet people? And, you know, we have all these things like dating apps and this and that. But the more I'm hearing is, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, is like, but it's so much harder to actually make a real connection. And so it's very interesting time that we're in. And, so I don't love to hear your thoughts on things. You're in a different world than I'm in. You know, I have the world where I'm hearing people talk and, you know, my office, but I'd love to maybe get your thoughts on some things.
I think a lot of it, that feeling alone, even though you are in a big group of people, comes from being buried on your phone. You know, and I go to a friend's house when I'm invited to one of their parties, and at the door, you have to leave your phone in a basket. And that means you have real conversations. You can't suddenly lose yourself or pretend. I mean, that's the other thing, is that, you know, you'll go to a conference or a luncheon and you feel awkward because there's so many people and you don't have anybody to talk to. So you go to your phone, you bury your face in a screen, and then you're not looking up to make eye contact with somebody. You're standing in a line And instead of engaging the person in front of you as you're waiting, you're scrolling your phone. So, you know, we're cutting ourselves off from having real engagement with other people because, you know, you're uncomfortable for whatever reason, and you'd rather look at your phone. I mean, I think then, you know, you'd rather look at your phone than have a conversation. And I think it's amazing to me that you have to make a conscious choice to put your phone into a basket when you go to a social event so you can socialize and not be looking on your phone. That's amazing to me. You know? Or you go to a restaurant and you look across at another table and there's four people at a table and they're all looking at their phones. Nobody's actually having a conversation. Or traveling. Mm-hmm. I travel a lot. And I was at Machu Picchu, and that's a mountainous area. And there's some areas when you're walking through Machu Picchu, just looking at the ruins and stuff, where if you're not watching where you're walking, you're going to walk off and fall a very long way down. And the number of people that I saw trying to do a selfie and not paying attention to where they were walking was staggering to me. It's just, you're going to kill yourself. You're going to walk yourself right off some ledge. And it becomes about getting the photo opportunity instead of saying, wow, look at where I am. How magnificent. Yeah. And, you know, how long these ruins have been here and the technology that it took to create what was here. It's just all that is you know, lost to wanting to get a photo op. So, you know, a lot of feeling disconnected, I think, is self-inflicted.
Well, you know, and I was just thinking as you said that, you do hear those unfortunate stories of people who do have tragic accidents. And, you know, it's interesting as you were saying that my son wanted to go see Bruno Mars for his birthday, and we walked into the theater and they took our phones and put them in these locked cases as soon as we walked in. And, you know, he said, what are they doing? And everyone was like, oh my gosh. And he made us lock up our phones for his concert. And he made this funny song about, like, you know, oh, it's a special night because I took your phones. And it's true. He just wanted us fully present for the concert. And I swear to you, even my son said it was the best concert ever because everybody was just present and focused, and you didn't have people in front of you taking, you know, video of the whole concert the whole time.
Right.
And I was thinking, gosh, I wish everybody would do that every time, because it was amazing. And mm-hmm. right, just to create that like dynamic where it's just like you didn't have the phone.
Right. And I'm guilty of it too. Where, you know, I'm focused on taking photos. However, I also do consciously not take photos. I do make a point of not documenting every single thing that I'm doing. And when I'm at dinner with somebody, my phone is not out most of the time, unless where something comes up on conversation and, oh, let me just look this up so we have an answer to it. Mm-hmm. I keep my phone in my purse. I don't use it while I'm having a dinner conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think, you know, what we're really talking about is like the intentional, like, connection. And, you know, imagine this podcast right now, if both of us were scrolling, it would be completely different, right? Like, I don't even know if we'd be tracking the conversation. But, you know, we can't get away from the devices. We can't get away from it. It's part of our society. It's part of everything right now. So how do you see, you know, this moving forward? I don't think it's going to get any better.
I think like, you know, I think like many things, you set boundaries. Yeah, you learn to you learn to manage your phone time, your screen time, instead of having it managing you. So yeah, mm-hmm. I know couples that the first hour they are up together, no phones. Mm-hmm. The last hour before they go to bed together, no phones. At the dinner table, no phones. So I think you can impose boundaries that are reasonable. We all get that phones have so much information. However, you don't need to be checking it every 5 seconds. You know, so I think really thinking about boundaries and how you can set them, and also the kind of information that you're taking in. Like, who are you following on social media? Are they toxic? Mm-hmm. If they are, I would consider deleting them, unfollowing them. I would consider your news and information sources that maybe you have, like, 5 news sources that you trust, and just stick with those and not try to read everything, and pick the times of day. Yeah. Late morning from, say, 11 to 11:30 a.m., you check in with news and information. Yeah. Maybe again at 5:30, you check in. And then that's it. You're not looking at the news throughout the day. It's not streaming into your head nonstop, mm-hmm. because that also causes a lot of anxiety, is just to hear so much news, and especially coming around any kind of election time when it's so polarizing, the conversations, that you really put limits on it. You'll still know what's going on. You know, the headlines get repeated. Mm-hmm. You know, after about a half hour, the same headlines are going again and again, mm-hmm. and again. So it's setting boundaries. You know. Yeah,
that's very true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So with this, you have the book, and so, like, are there projects you're working on now that the book is written, and like, what's up next for you in terms of, like, what you're working on?
Oh, well, all kinds of things. So right now I've got a digital course that's based on the chapters of my book. So that's coming out soon. And then I have in the app store, I have an app that's called the same as my book, Take a Shot at Happiness, and you can download that in the App Store. So coming from a creative background, I took a creative approach to happiness. And when I was writing the book, I felt, after reading so many books over the years, I felt that many of them were prescriptive, that this is how happiness goes. This is the way it should be. I felt a lot, in my opinion, they tended to be more textbook oriented, or they were maybe too spiritually oriented, or they were too narrow in topic. I didn't feel I was reading books that were three-dimensional, that really talked about happiness from the perspective of mind, body, and spirit, and how it all integrates in a way that I felt was holistic. I essentially wrote the book that I wished I would have had. Now, I take an explorer's approach to happiness. So when you're done reading the chapter on forgiveness, there are camera phone photography prompts and journaling prompts that help you explore, what does forgiveness mean within your framework of happiness? How I define forgiveness as it relates to my happiness is likely going to be different than yours. You know, we come from different cultures. You know, we have a different educational background and different set of friends. You know, we grew up differently. So, yeah, our definitions are a little bit different. We may share some common things when it comes to forgiveness and happiness, but then there's going to be some very significant differences. And so my book guides readers in that exploration. So ultimately, what is going to make you happier? You know? So there's that. And then I'm happy to say I'm writing my second book. And that book is on abundance. So I'm probably almost three chapters into writing that new book. Yeah. So I'm pretty excited about that.
That's fantastic. Well, I mean, that's great because it sounds like you're people can really delve into the book and make it more personal rather than just reading it and like, you know, it sounds like it's going to be an exploration for them too. You came at it from an exploratory kind of perspective, but like people can really explore it for themselves, like what happiness is for them. And I think that's kind of the first kind of question I was getting at with you too, is like, you know, people may be asking themselves, like, what is happiness? And maybe through reading your book and like really getting into the exercises, they will come out at the other end really knowing what that is for themselves. And so I think that's fantastic that you were able to integrate some exercises and some things for people to do that.
And it was very intentional. Doing that was very, very intentional. Because I wrote what worked for me and I thought would work for others based on my research. I mean, I just didn't say, oh, well, this sounds good and write about it. I researched it. So I both experienced it and then got the knowledge behind it. And I also felt that's what made my book different than what was already out there, is that I was encouraging people to do the exploration of what's going to make them happier, not just read the book that says, well, this will make you happier. Well, go figure it out for yourself. You know, and here's how you can do it. You know, I have given a roadmap, you know, for how to explore what that happiness is. And going back to what I was saying, you know, and I talk about this in my book, we're not taught how to be happy. We're not taught how to manage our well-being. So this is a step in that direction. You know, happiness is it's a learnable skill, if you will. Yeah. So I think it's really important because, you know, when I was early in my journey and I would hear people say, well, you know, I'll be happy when the kids go off to school, you know, when I get my degree, it was always at a later time. And, you know, the newsflash is you need to be happy now because your happiness, how you feel inside, impacts the relationships that you have, and that's a ripple out into the rest of the world. And so when I get asked, what is the key to happiness? It's choice. It's choice backed up by intentional, consistent actions that will boost your happiness. And there are exercises, which you can find in my book, that can help you level up your happiness. And so I feel that happiness is when your thoughts and emotions and actions are in alignment with the things that you value. So I feel what I'm giving is a framework. So now you explore what I just said for how it works in your life. You know, how are your thought patterns? How are those thought patterns motivating your behavior? Yeah, and are they in alignment with the things that you care about? A lot of times when we feel that we're suffering, It's because we're not in alignment with the things that we value. You know, we're doing something because it's a paycheck, or and I'm not saying that you shouldn't do those things. I'm not implying that. I mean, we have to put a roof over our heads. We need to pay for our insurance and our kids to go to school and things like that. So I'm not discounting that. What I'm suggesting is that you really look at what is going to make you happier, and even in those circumstances that are, you know, obligations because of family or whatever, you know, your circumstances, you can at least affect your mindset around it to make it be okay for you.
No, I think everything you're saying, probably people are listening kind of shaking their heads, because I find so often people go down a path thinking, I'm doing all the right things that I've been told should, I'm saying should in quotes, make me happy. And there's a lot of just disillusionment and disappointment when they're going, wait a minute, I did all the right things. Why am I not happy? Why, what did I do wrong? Quote unquote, or like, this isn't what I expected. And that can be really devastating, to your point. And so I think, you know, going through all the things in your book will help a lot of people, right? Because I think people will just kind of listen to maybe even other people or live their life for what other people have expectations, you know, mm-hmm. for themselves, and put it on, you know, it's like, oh, I listened to this person and this person and this person. If I'm going to be a doctor or a lawyer, if I get married and have kids, or if I, you know, look this way or weigh this much, or, you know, whatever it is, it's like, I'm supposed to be happy now. Why am I not? And it's like, because you didn't look in yourself and say, like, what do I want? Right?
Yeah, exactly. Some of the most popular classes at Harvard, Yale, Stanford, you know, academic institutions like that are Ivy League schools, the happiness classes. You know, because students are so mm-hmm. stressed out. They're so worried about the future. They want the emotional tools. They want the well-being tools to better manage their current and future lives. It's a big deal.
It is. And I, you know, it's sad to me now, even I got work with a lot of teenagers, and it's like, you know, I should be happy because I'm getting straight A's, and there's so much pressure to get straight A's and get into college. And like, I'm going and I'm looking at them and they have no social life. They're studying all the time and they're miserable. And they're like, that's not happiness. It's like, what are you doing all this for? You're missing out on your whole life when you're young and you're miserable and stressed. I mean, it's like the anti-happiness.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
Yeah. Right? I have colleagues who, you know, over the years have done a lot more production than I have and have made a lot more money than I have. They have the big houses, the jets, the whatever, the cars. And I think, yeah, but I saw what you went through over the years to get to that. Was it really worth mm-hmm. it? Was it really, really worth the stress? Was it worth, you know, some of the mm-hmm. diseases that it brought on? Yeah. Oh. The times you didn't spend with your family and friends, was it really worth it? Yeah. And I'm sure there are those who say yes, because look at what I have now, and that's fine. That's your perspective. And you're entitled to that. And then you have others that said, gosh, I should have spent more time having fun. I have heard that so many mm-hmm. times. I should have spent more time having fun.
All right. Well, I hope people want to get your book. So how can they find you, your book, your app, everything? Maria, how can they get all of that?
Oh, thank you. Well, look up my name. So my website is mariabaltazzi.com. My social media is at Maria Baltazzi. So Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. And I also teach on Insight Timer. I teach meditation, so people can find me there. Nice. And then you can order my book, Take a Shot at Happiness, How to Write, Direct, and Produce the Life You Want, which has won 9 awards at this point. Yeah. So it's an award-winning book on happiness. And that can be ordered online wherever books are sold. So Amazon, Goodreads, Barnes and Noble, and at local bookstores. You can also order it online at your favorite local bookstore. And then the app, if you go to the app store and just look up Take a Shot at Happiness, you can download it. And please let me know how you like it.
Fantastic. Yeah. Maria, this has been such a pleasure. I really appreciate you being here talking about all this. And I'm definitely going to promote your book. And, I'm probably going to go get a copy myself to, hand out when I think people might need it. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Any last final words before we end?
That you really make that choice. First of all, thank you so much for having me here. I've enjoyed our conversation tremendously. And I encourage everyone to become a happiness explorer. Make that conscious choice to not only be happy, but then to do something about it. Happiness is within your reach. It's within your control. You just have to make that your choice. So that's my advice, is just make the choice and then do something about it. Explore what happiness really means for you.
Thank you again. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening today. Behind the Bite podcast is created by me, Dr. Christina Castanini, as part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network and produced by the Tweaky Tales. I love hearing from my listeners. So if you like the show, please like, rate, and subscribe to it on whatever platform you're on. And for anyone who wants to understand their relationship with food better, or who might be wondering if they have an eating disorder, I have a free 9-week e-course at my website. Just go to www.behindthebitepodcast.com to get your free e-course today. Please note, this podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regard to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither host, the publisher, or the guests are rendering legal, clinical, or other professional information. If you want or need a professional, you should find one to work with who can address your individual needs and situation. Thank you.